Welcome to another episode of We the People Radio.
Hi.
I have a feeling it's going to be an episode.
Oh, no, it's going to be wonderful.
My name is Aaron Ryan.
And I'm Bill Cundiff.
Huh.
Yeah.
Go figure.
Yeah, we have a sponsor today. It's Pape Machinery. They're located at 3119 Twin View Boulevard in Shasta Lake City. They're our full-line John Deere ag and turf dealer. And tis the season to get out there and get your yard taken care of and mow your fields. Go by and see them. They got all the equipment you need to get that done. They're also a steel dealer now. They have everything from chainsaws to weed trimmers. They got it all for you down there. And also, as it warms up, get ready for PG&E to shut your power off. They got generators ready to go. So go by and see them. Or give them a call at 226-9226 or get them on the web at PapeMachinery.com.
Or you can you can do that.
Or
Bill's so predictable. Or you can go to WeThePeopleRadio.us and they're right there on the front page with all the links.
Got a little link there to them.
You can go
right by there and check them out.
Okay, so today is April 26th, 2020. We're still in plus or minus pandemic land, although there are more cars out. I don't know what that means exactly, but
Traffic was kind of heavy today.
We will find out. Our guest today is Eureka Young, but I need 5 seconds because my computer didn't open like it should have.
You're not ready?
In a timely fashion.
You're not ready?
No, I wasn't ready. I was screwing around. That hardly ever happens, too, because I'm so punctual.
As hard as I try.
I'm so punctual, said no one ever. I guess I should tell people at the top of our page at We the People Radio. So you go to WeThePeopleRadio.us. Something weird going on with my microphone. You can see shows on veterans, South Africa, China, Islam, environmentalism, marijuana, and those are all tabbed for you. And then the archives go back 10 years. But we tried to kind of coalesce those shows so that you could go through them without doing a lot of searching. The list we've been doing on China started in November of 2018. So I think you'd learn a lot if you start at the beginning and kind of go through the programs. They're commercial free. They don't cost you anything to listen either. And you MP3 files, you can, send them to a friend or do whatever you want with them. So there you go. That's my promo for the day. Oh, next week we are talking about we're going back to kind of a veterans issue, and this guy's really interesting. I found him on a thing, oddly enough, from the VA, an announcement that came into my email, and he is a behavioral profiler. He was a sniper, and he's not behavioral profiling to sniper people. He did that already.
He was a sniper.
He stopped snipering.
He doesn't profile you. You're in the crosshairs.
He stopped snipering, and now he's doing behavioral profiling. But super interesting guy. Sounds really, really nice, and he'll be on with us next week. So back to this week. Our guest, Eureka Young, has been on with us before. Super interesting. Came to the United States from China as a college student in 1988, attended Eastern Michigan University in a small town east of Ann Arbor. After graduate school, he worked I'm going to skip that part. I'm sorry. I was getting into the weeds there. He works in real-time information processing after the search engine company was acquired by a UK-based company, which in turn was acquired by HP. Huh, imagine that. He currently works at a major financial services company. So a lot of times we have microbiologists on, we've got other people from China, but this will be a different viewpoint. And since 2012, he's provided research, analysis, and other services to private investors and not-for-profit organizations covering macroeconomic and geopolitical topics in U.S.-China relations. So always timely, and especially timely now. So we haven't spoken with you in, a month.
Yeah, not too long ago. Last time I was on your program, and one of your guest speakers, Dr. Chan, brought up the issue that WHO was misleading the world. And
wasn't that funny? And you were way ahead of the news there.
Right. Now, you're leading the news by by a month or two.
Yeah, Bill and I were sitting there, and that came out, on some news broadcast we were watching. We looked at each other, we're like, didn't we tell everyone that, 2 months ago?
They didn't believe us.
No, thanks, you guys, for keeping us ahead of the curve. So what are you hearing these days?
Yeah, I'm hearing bad things in China and how China is painting the United States is now like being swept, like swept out, and how they are doing a really good job because they covered up the numbers, right? They also allowed people to leave the country, and they prevented the WHO to give warnings to announce this as an international pandemic until like March. And so with all the effective work that they did in dragging the world down with the people of Wuhan who were the first who suffered the first wave attack, now they're claiming that they are probably the country that's leading the fight. And in so doing, although it was all celebrations and praises in China, but I think it got backfired, that policy. And not just here. I know people in the United States were angry, and we are seeing a lot of deaths, and especially those who defended freedom, defended the United States, defended our values, and the veterans. Many of them, they succumbed. Yeah, they came under the infection, and some families, they suffered tremendous loss. And I saw a picture saying, in the woods, it was really nice. They said it was a very serene and beautiful life into retirement. Now with this tragedy, hitting them. So here, we really need. It's time for us to think, we really need to defend America's values, and not just in this land. We need to defend far, and we need take a look at Asia, in Hong Kong, in all those countries and regions and areas where United States had been helping people since 70, 80 years ago, since the end of the World War II, had been helping these economies, a lot of Asian countries, their economy took off, and their people are changing into because of their the demand of their people. Many countries like South Korea, like Taiwan, they turned democratic, and that they are now like democracies, and it is really a time to defend all those who stand for freedom, and only by defending them who share the values that Americans all share, can we defend ourselves in this land of we call it that this land that has drawn people from all over the world to come over, and it has. And I have been calling it home for now, I think 30 years, and over 30 years. So that's just something that just came to my mind.
Well, it's interesting because when China first started telling people that, I think they started with the CIA did it, and then
the American troops took it over there.
It started with CIA. The CIA did it, and then everybody was kind of like, huh? And that didn't get much steam. And then they started with the American military. But that was in end of January or something. It's like, really, guys? I mean, they said they just did it. So I don't know. I would think they would be terrific liars, but I don't know. I think they dropped the ball on this one. Whoever was crafting the story, I think didn't do a very good job. When we come back, I would kind of like to know, just from your contacts that you have over there, if the people in China actually are believing most of this. I realize their communication is limited and they pretty much have one source, which is their government.
Well, and their ability to speak out is a little bit...
Well, they don't get to say anything, but I guess I'm just kind of curious how far you think the truth has penetrated inside China. So we are here with Eureka Young. You're listening to We the People, and you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
What shall we do about them? baby did a bad, bad thing.
What'd you do?
What made this time? All right, and I also forgot to say that you can also catch our show on KRDT Channel 23.7 Tuesday nights on the American Uncensored Television News Network. So that's also out there. Thanks to our friend Rick Trader for that. All right, so Eureka, what do you think about the whole propaganda campaign over there?
Yeah, the lies that the war is spun out one after another, right?
Yeah.
When they first came out, I believe a lot of Chinese, as far as I know, they did believe in this fabricated story that it was disseminated by U.S. special agents, by U.S. military personnel, and they gave vivid details about how these military athletes, how they were infected, how they were transported back, how they were hospitalized in China, and all the details of it. Then, until like now, they hit their number, and they were trying to cover up the severity in order to not to lose their grip on power. And now, when this when it started. Like impacting Iran, Italy, and France, Spain, and eventually United States. Now the overseas, like outside the border of China, the numbers are really like climbing. Now no one believed in that, right? They thought, how could U.S. athletes like disseminate the virus? And the United States did not even have masks on store to embrace this, like. The spread of the virus, of the Wuhan virus.
Right.
So now Chinese people no longer believe that. But then the government started spinning a new story, like saying it was leaked from United States labs. And that's how U.S. was like surprised.
Of course.
Wow. I'm like rubber, you're like glue, bounces off me, sticks to you.
Yeah, something like that.
Right.
Yeah, liar, liar, pants on fire.
Yeah. But these Chinese people, they got so used to watch like state-run media, and their foreign ministry spokesperson, when they answer questions, we saw how they are just spinning out like just lie after lie and after lie. There's no credibility whatsoever. But however, their audience, though, those spokespersons' audience, rather than international media, they wanted to talk things like how to fool Chinese people and how to make their superiors happy. So that's the main audience they're serving. So that's why even their diplomats were spinning this lie of athletes. They are stationed overseas. They knew all the reports. And I had to defend the United States. Like on one occasion, when my relatives started saying, no, don't tell me like China is covering up the numbers. We know a lot of things that you don't even know. First they said you're like disseminating virus here. Then they said, okay, it was leaked out from your labs. Then I told them, think about it. See, there are a lot of people in the United States, they're trying to impeach President Trump, right? So if there is something bad that the administration did, you think, like CNN or New York Times, like, wouldn't they be following up more tightly than you could in China? You couldn't even visit New York Times. You couldn't even walk.
Yeah, we have a fairly wide swath of anti-Trump media that probably would have covered that story.
Well, it begs the question, if, you know, they're telling all these lies and all these different stories, it makes you wonder why they're so afraid of the truth. What is it really that they are hiding? They know that they don't want to say, and they're going to throw all this false stuff out there.
Well, if the people in China, just out of curiosity, if they actually knew the truth, if the government said, hey, you know, we were doing an experiment on a lab, not that this is ever going to happen, but let's just say that they did admit that it got started in China, would the people in China turn on them? Would they be mad at them, or are they just kind of used to it?
No, they succumbed to the brutality of the regime. Even if it started in China, and now Chinese people knew that it started in China, but because of decades of nationalistic kind of brainwashing, and they would be really offended when I mentioned the term Wuhan virus. They thought it is kind of a stigma. It is kind of it's a shame that we are kind of picking up on Wuhan rather than being sympathetic to the plight of people in Wuhan. So the people, they didn't want to use the term Wuhan virus because of years of indoctrination by communist propaganda. And so I have to be more careful when I'm talking to them than I can be more free. While I'm talking to my colleagues here, to friends, I can be very freely just using it. If I say coronavirus, nobody's going to be concerned. If I say Wuhan virus, they know what I'm talking about. So I don't have to be really careful.
What if you call it the CCP virus? Is that, like, verboten?
Yeah. That's the... CCP virus is good. I think it's a good term. I'm not using that frequently, but I think it's a good term.
Well, because people don't know what it means, but I guess in China, if you said that and the people in China knew you said that, is that bad, like Wuhan virus? I mean...
They probably would be afraid because of Secretary General.
That's true.
Yeah, came to power.
They would pretend like they didn't hear you.
Power. And now, if I say that, they would feel like they are associated with somebody who is strongly like against the Communist Party, right? Which would, kind of put their life in danger and put their career.
I'm not destined to live in an authoritarian country because I don't have a very good filter.
Right, and
snap me out of
they have a program for that.
They'd snatch me off the street the second day I was there. Yeah, maybe the first.
Yes, and for Chinese, they once they know they now more or less know that it came out from Wuhan. The people traveled to Iran, so they know that, and some are worried that a lot of Russians got infected. And they are counting on Russia being like their ally in standing up against the United States. So now they are really worried, and they know it is them that spread the virus across the world. And now they want to focus on how the United. They want to pretend that they are victim, right? They were being discriminated on the international stage, and a lot of foreign countries, like European countries, because they sent defective face masks and the testing kits to Europe, and just like a day or two ago, Canada sent a freight freight cargo over there trying to pick up 1 million face masks. They turned out all defective.
Oh, great.
And they were the crew were told to leave because those who are stationed in the airport who were supposed to be delivering the equipment, the package to the Canadian crew, they heard that in Canada, in North America, and everybody is kind of a suspect, right, could be carrying the Wuhan virus, though they're not allowed to call it Wuhan virus. And so they did not want the crew member to check into a hotel. They wanted to leave right away, although they didn't. They weren't able to try to, since they flew over there, they couldn't bring back the supplies. They wanted to find alternatives. Right? They're working very hard. They have Canadian people's health and safety in their mind, but they were told that you had to leave, so they came back empty-handed. That's how it is.
Another story I heard was that early on, Italy and France and some of these European countries donated tons of PPE to China to help them in Wuhan. And now with the shortage, China is now selling those same supplies back to the countries that gave them to them. The same exact supplies.
Yeah, like they bought it in China, they went to went to like Italy. Then Italy donated them back,
mm-hmm.
and then China sold them back to Italy a second time.
Yes, Yeah.
Yes, with the same printing, same packaging.
Exact same packaging, yeah. That's got to make you feel good.
That's painful.
Yeah, when it came out, people were shocked. But after that shipment, then people realized that they were lucky to get the original shipment back, even if they paid an exorbitant price, because subsequent shipments
were
of inferior quality. They were not usable. And they were putting people's life really in danger because the testing kits, they're of only like a 20% accuracy ratio. And so when you are tested negative, you don't know whether you are negative. When tested positive, I cannot be certain whether I am or not. Yeah. And people could be like released from hospital.
So if it was the same stuff you got back the second time, it was...
at least you knew you were getting the real
deal. It was
deal.
Extra good at twice the price. Jeez. Yeah. Some of that is just really hard to wrap your mind around because you just think, I don't know, who would do that? But I guess they're kind of pros there. I'm curious what your information is on how this relates to SARS, because I think most of us weren't paying really close attention to SARS maybe, and I guess I'm just kind of interested on how that connected. We have to take a really quick break, though, however, before we do that. And we will be right back with our guest, Eureka Young. You're listening to We the People Radio. You can find us online at wethepeopleradio.us. Songs that start with bad today. Maybe it's just because I started at the top of the alphabet, but anything that starts with bad, I'm like, ooh, that'd be a good one. Just in case radio isn't enough for you, We the People is now on KRDT, channel 23.7 on Tuesday nights in Reading, the Reading area, I should say, on the American Uncensored Television News Network. There you go. Okay, so, Eureka, what do you think about that we were talking about right before we... unceremoniously cut you off.
SARS 17 years ago.
Yeah.
I think there were Chinese reports a year or two after SARS outbreak that it came out from Chinese labs. So there were reports. I didn't follow up too closely on that. I thought it wouldn't have an impact, like, with our current...
The only reason I ask is because we've had several people who have told us that China's purpose for sort of becoming a major player in the WHO was because during SARS it made them look bad.
Yes. Yep. And it doubled its effort, maybe quadrupled its effort to try to take control of WHO. So I believe... a year or two. In the year of the SARS outbreak, it was 2003, and they tried to lift, back then, the regulation of like announcing a pandemic, announcing whether a country was should be locked down or should be declared like a disease area. So there were different rules. In 2005 or so, there came out new rules. And even prior to 2005, China wanted that categorization to be lifted very quickly because it wanted its economy back on track. So after 2005, with the new rule, they installed Margaret Chan to be to be the secretary general over there, director general over there, and she was like in charge of WHO for over a decade. And then she like installed the current director general, Tedros, in place. So, and at the beginning of this outbreak of Wuhan virus, they were China's major concern was not to be declared like a country, like with a lot of people. In fact, that's why they want to cover up the outbreak and hold the number down. And they really resisted United States banning air traffic. And they threatened South Korea, and they threatened Taiwan, and they threatened a lot of countries where they had enough leverage, like Iran, to not to sever any travel connections. And that's how it spread the virus all across the world. And I think another threat of development was, in addition to its economic concern, it also started developing in biotechnology field. It started developing this kind of a genome, like a sequencing. I don't know the exact term of these things, but it's for sequencing the genomes and trying to find man-made virus that only they would have the vaccines for. So then this...
That's a neat trick.
Yep, this leads to those like labs, like P4 labs, P3, P2 labs in China. And I'm glad all departments, all levels of U.S. administration, now they are pursuing that. I heard like a spokesperson from DOD, I heard like Secretary Pompeo, and I heard like President Trump in his press briefing, he mentioned like we are conducting our own investigation while China is investigating that under pressure of the United States. Though their foreign ministry spokesperson denied that. They didn't even want to acknowledge they're investigating. But from U.S. officials, we learned clearly that United States communicated in most clear terms to Chinese leadership that we need transparency. We need to know. We need the earliest cases. We need the first results of those who tested positive. So, but China is hiding. I believe their labs are doing that. And now the question is not whether they're doing it. It's whether they intentionally leaked it or it is unintentional.
Right.
Trump.
Right. Now, that you know what you said about developing a virus and only they have the...
Yeah.
The cure to. I mean, when you think about that, that's a pretty frightening thought that they could unleash something that their people would not be affected by.
Just a tiny bit of biological warfare there.
Yeah, I mean that's pretty scary. When do you think, realistically, when do you think this virus hit the United States? Because there's a lot of talk now that it could have hit here as early as November. Do you have any information on that?
I do not have direct information, but I think, if along the line of biotech supremacy, that's what People's Liberation Army, PLA in short, China's military, they have been pursuing something called biotech supremacy for over a decade. And I haven't heard much about they're doing that as early as November. But with this, I do hear rumors among Chinese and among those with connections in Taiwan. They are saying why Taiwan did better, because they were on the front line. They knew they just had their presidential election. They knew the communist regime is sabotaging Taiwan's democracy. Mm-hmm. So they are on high alert. And everybody from people like in Far East, they expected that when the outbreak somehow got transmitted over to the United States, whether via Italy or France or Spain or Britain or Canada, the fatality rate wouldn't be this high, because it's after each human transmission, the severity would drop. But since it did not drop, so there are rumors. I haven't heard in the United States. I didn't have many contacts here. But I do hear from people in Asia that United States, they really need to stay on high alert and they need to test food supplies, need to test water systems to make sure not just a guard against this virus, but against any biotech like weaponry like being deployed against general public in the United States. Mm-hmm. This theory of biotech supremacy came into being 10, 11 years after this asymmetric warfare doctrine became vogue in 1999. In 1999, there was this asymmetric warfare theory propagated by a general, I believe, in Air Force. His name, General Chao Liang. He taught in their defense university for the People's Liberation Army, and he figured that China is probably no match against the United States if like how many like aircraft carriers China has had, right? It had none. And how many like airplanes, which generation, like the fifth generation for the United States, maybe like 2-3 generations China like was behind. But he started this idea of asymmetric warfare to attack United States electric power grid and to attack like United States, which did occur. It was like in early 2000s. There was this huge power outage, but somehow it didn't trace to Chinese military. Then how to attack like U.S. population with biological weapons. Then 10 years into that, 10 years later, around the year 2010, there is a senior colonel. His name is Senior Colonel Guo Jiwei. He published a leading, it's Xinhua Press. Xinhua is China's top news agency. He published his book. And General Chao, the guy who first came up with this asymmetrical warfare doctrine, he wrote a preface to this biotech supremacy book by the senior major Guo. And in that, they want to tilt the balance of power by deploying biochemical weapons. So it had been pursuing, PLA had been pursuing this for a long time, but we heard very little. And the only place, the official place I heard about United States media talking about it, yeah, two places, they cross-reference each other. One is Washington Times. There is a gentleman, Bill Gertz, who has deep connections with the U.S. intelligence community. He wrote about how China was violating the chemical and the biochemical weaponry treaty. There's an international treaty in 1980s, how China signed that and is violating that. And his research was quoted by a senior DOD advisor, Michael Pillsbury, in a well-known book, 100-Year Marathon, about PLA and the Communist Party's two bicentennial goals. One bicentennial was 1921 was when CCP was founded. So 2021, which is only a few months from now, less than a year from now, is the 100th anniversary of CCP. And the other 100th year anniversary is 2049, since Communist Party took over China in 1949. So they have this two centennial goals. By the first 100th anniversary, they're thinking about like taking over Taiwan, right? Then the next 100-year like mark, by 2049, they're going to surpass the United States. And if they couldn't do it with like in outer space, with information technology, with nuclear weaponry, with like Air Force, they would try to do it, like seeking alternative ways. So they
biological warfare, maybe. Yeah, alternative ways. That sounds kind of creepy. I'd be curious to know what the people in China are being told about that kind of stuff when we come back. I'm always interested in what the world looks like from their vantage point, because I know it's extremely different from what we see. And so we will be back in just 2 minutes. Got to take a little break and celebrate a little capitalism here. You are listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. Sure, the CCP dislikes our choice of music, which thrills me to no end. So you're listening to We the People, and you can find us on channel 23.7. I don't know how you tune in 23.7. I haven't had.
You turn your rabbit ears just a little bit to the right.
I know, and there's a trick to that.
One to the left.
Every time I say it, I'm like, what does that mean? Yeah. Anyway, it's Tuesday nights. I know what that means, and it's on the American Uncensored Network here in Reading. So he asked me to keep announcing it, see, so I have to leave it right on my screen so I see it all the time. Otherwise, you know, I rabbit trail and I start talking about other stuff. So, Eureka, what I'm curious about, like the people in Taiwan, the people in Hong Kong, Singapore, all those folks, do they hear what we hear? Or are they kind of in a bubble too?
They do. They do hear what we hear. And they are coping with this pandemic better, because they are aware how Beijing lied during SARS and how they're going to continue to lie throughout. They lied at the outbreak of Wuhan virus. They are lying today about zero infection confirmed cases in China.
Yeah.
And they will continue to spin lies. So they know about all that. So they're being very careful, and they are doing a pretty they're doing a good job.
Oh, that's good. That gives them a fighting chance, anyway.
Speaking of that, what have you heard anything?
You read my mind.
Concrete about the actual numbers?
Yeah, that's what I was
ask. Of people that have died in Wuhan, because we're getting, you know, mixed stories about that.
Well, it all of a sudden stopped. The count stopped after they brought in the incinerators, which was nothing short of super creepy.
Yeah. And I saw only calculations. I do not have a direct contact with those officials. They stayed away from me. I have a college roommate, and it's very close. We're both in computer science. We're both, in that department. And not only that department, also that small subdivisions, both in computer science and engineering. And I believe that person worked in the government of Hubei province. Hubei's capital city is Wuhan, so they are kind of working in that area. But I did not stay in touch with them so as not to bring any trouble to those folks back there. And so I can only gather from public sources. And they added up these numbers, and some Chinese news media, they are quite, they're they are quite honest because they want to earn the reputation. Probably that would be associated with both like integrity and as well as revenue, because people in the matter of in such a matter of life and then death, people want facts. So there's some media outlets within China. So they sent their reporters to Wuhan the day when people were allowed to pick up urns, right, ashes. And so they went there and they saw a kind of a freight, a cargo, not a bus, but a kind of a vehicle. The reporter talked to the driver, and the driver said, "I'm delivering 2,500 like ash boxes today, and I already did as many yesterday. So that was already 5,000, even in 2 days. And people are scheduled to go there to pick up their loved ones' ashes, like for a week or more."
Wow.
So that was only in one crematory site.
Right.
And
right.
Yeah, there are eight or so. That is probably one of the major or medium or large-sized ones. Then multiply 8 or 10. So the reporter came up with these numbers, and in the among Chinese journalists and China watchers, they thought that the number was like to be on the conservative side would be 50,000. But then there are those who the entire family got wiped out, and then no one would be going there. And then there are those who are from out of town. And back then, Wuhan lockdown wasn't lifted, so those families wouldn't be notified. And then based on how fast they could burn dead body and dead bodies, and also their live accounts with first-hand witnesses saying people weren't even dead. They were still like struggling.
Oh.
Then they got thrown into the body bag, and then they were like shipped over for cremation. So there were many sad stories, and the number, other people's estimate, the most conservative was in the above 50,000, but people thought it would be 100,000 or more in Wuhan alone. Then Hubei province in the nearby, the numbers would also be quite significant, because people travel. It is like people, a little bit similar to New York City, only that in China, when you go visit relatives, you don't check into a hotel. You stay with your relatives, like siblings or son-in-laws. So they visited Wuhan, and it was during China's, like prior to China's Lunar New Year.
Oh,
so people were traveling back to the countryside and coming to Wuhan. So there were a lot of traveling. So nearby cities and towns in Wuhan also suffered huge casualty. But those numbers we did not even have. Those honest, more transparent media outlets, they didn't have enough people to cover those cities, because it's not easy to travel from Wuhan to a nearby city. You have to spend like 14 days like before you would be able to talk to people.
Mm-hmm.
So there is this kind of isolation period. And so that was Wuhan. But then on the other hand, in other cities of China, I think the numbers were indeed low. They were not as low as the government announced. They were very low. So the first during the first outbreak, the the majority of people who died, they died in Wuhan and Hubei province. And in other cities, I have relatives and friends, and I heard the cases of someone were infected, people were infected, but those close to us, I didn't hear anyone who died. But now the problem is there is this second outbreak, because China, before we came to this 12:45 break, you were thinking about how Chinese people were viewing this and how they thought about like what the government told them, what the government warfare like strategy and all that. A lot of Chinese, they were pressured to go back to work. So is the government. they are running out of their foreign reserve is running low, and the jobless rate was like skyrocketing. It is worse than the United States, as bad as we are here. They were much worse because they depended very much on export business. There were three pillars. One was the infrastructure. One was the construction for high-rise buildings, residential and commercial. Then the other is export. Now all the three pillars are kind of collapsed, and the people were out of job, and so they had to go back. And with people going back to work, with kids going back to school, there are cases where kids died. Then parents took to the streets to protest. No matter what the government did to adults, they would always endure. They would not even rebel, or they would not even protest. But when the government took the lives of their kids away, they would take to the streets.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
So I mean, I think that's the same thing everywhere. You know, you can go ahead and work. It's almost like siblings too. You know, we can beat each other up, but if the kid down the street slugs your brother, it's like, oh, all bets are off.
Yep, we started seeing. So there is this imminent threat of a second outbreak. I'm not sure how severe it is going to be. It also impacts bordering provinces. On the north, the province that borders Heilongjiang province borders Russia. China closed the checkpoints, the border passes entirely down. They coordinate, I believe, with the Russian government. Mm. They probably conceded. Economically, they made economic concessions. Their rumors were saying that they were buying crude oil, paying exorbitant price, 10 times the world market going rate they're paying Russian government.
Oh, wow.
So as Russians wouldn't force China to open the border, to deport close to 1 million or so Chinese nationals over there.
Brutal. We will be right back. We have another hour with our guest, Eureka Young. We are talking about China. And you can catch all of this at WeThePeopleRadio.us.